Hi, this is Mav. So before we get this episode going, I just want to address something. Wayne's here too. Hey, Wayne.
Hey, Matt.
So if you follow the comic book community, you might know who we're talking about, but it's not specific. So I just want to say that Wayne and I lost a friend this week to suicide, and there's a lot of backstory that I don't really want to go into. This isn't the place. It's weird because we knew him personally and it can't be personal and we don't want it to be. So we're not going to talk about it on today's episode. But I do want to just say if you are struggling and you have problems, people are out there for you, and we will be posting the suicide hotline, which is 988, in the show notes, just as a matter of it's important. So
There, just remember, there are people out there who care about you. Reach out, find the people you love. There are always other options.
done. With that, I'm just going to turn it back over, and we're going to go to the regular show. Welcome back to Vox Popcast, the weekly pseudo-academic roundtable of pop culture analysis with drinking and swearing. My name is Christopher Maverick, but you can call me Mav, and I am once again here with, surprisingly, all of my co-hosts. Everybody's here. We got Wayne, we got Katya, we got Monica, we got Hannah. Hey guys, how's it going?
I feel so
hey,
cold
Mav.
Right now.
It's so
cold when
cold
you get the band
outside.
Together.
North Carolina.
Define cold. Oh, I said I feel called out right now, not cold.
Oh.
Wow.
I'm leaving that. I'm
but
not going to edit
actually,
it because it was just like, that was amazing.
well, first of all, I am a little cold because it is like a little colder. Like it's getting down to 38 tonight.
Define
it's
colder.
April.
Getting Define down to colder.
It was
what is
80.
The high?
It was 80 this week, and now it's back to like.
I'm sorry, 80
81.
Is a little colder?
No, oh, that was when it was warm. Now it's down to 61.
I'm sorry, 61 is a little colder?
So,
oh my gosh, Katya, he's like a lizard. I've gotten used to like icking.
61's
but
like
cold.
Not even jacket weather here.
Well, I grew up on the beach. What do you guys want from me? But
yeah,
I
was
going to
say, for me, 61 is time for a sweater, like a heavy sweater.
Huh?
Yeah,
I will say,
is
one
heavy.
Of the last times I was
that's shorts and flip flops in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
One of the last times I was in Los Angeles, I was on, I forget where I was exactly, but I remember it was like 65 degrees out, and I saw this woman still looked cold walking around in a full length fur coat. And I was just like, I'm not meant to be here, am I?
I'm just checking. It is 51 degrees right here in Pittsburgh right now. I am wearing a hoodie. I don't have a shirt on underneath. I've been outside.
This has been your Vox Popcast weather update.
weather.
That's what we're talking about
exciting
for the next 2 hours. Yeah, right?
Yep.
That's what we're talking about?
I mean, yeah.
That
the
was my weather
impacts
report.
Of weather.
Weather.
You know, if we
God's
waited
or just
like
natural.
2 months, Twisters is coming out, and then we could have done a weather and pop
Oh my God.
Episode.
Oh my God! I so okay.
I forgot
is it,
about that.
Is this our next lame movie episode? Do we want to? I kind of want.
Can
this,
we
guys.
Have my dad on? Because my dad loved the original one, and I feel like he's just gonna be cranky about it.
I mean,
like,
I
on
have.
Principle.
You
know what? I think it's gonna be a good movie.
Oh, I don't. I think if my dad's listening to this, he can confirm or deny because I know he sometimes listens to the podcast. But I think my dad will just be cranky about it on principle because it's not the same as the original. I mean, unless it's literally just the same movie with updated like shot. Exactly the same with better graphics.
From the previews, I'm not convinced it's not going to be that. I think it might
oh
very
God.
Much be.
Well, then honestly, then maybe they know their demographic. I don't know. Like
I don't
I'm pretty
know,
sure
but
my parents
didn't
Twister.
we like two or three weeks ago when we did the episode on cover songs, didn't we propose the idea of cover movies
mm-hmm.
as an episode? And we should talk about that someday.
Yeah, that's going to come soon because a friend of the show, Nicole Frime, was on this show, I think 2 weeks ago as this airs, because I'm still not sure about the order of episodes, but she is interested in being on that episode. So yeah,
okay.
So good. I think we have not recorded that episode at time of recording. So if things went out of order and that show is already aired and I didn't edit this out for some reason, I apologize to the listeners, but I don't think it has.
time travel podcast.
Yeah, you know, it's an exciting time.
So how are you guys doing? It's been a very long time since everybody's been on the show together.
I think the last time we were all on was the movie thing, because I think that was actually the last time I was on, because
a box office draft. Right. Yeah.
If you want a box office update, I can tell you who's currently winning.
Huh?
Yes.
It's me, right? It's me. I'm clearly in the lead. No, I'm not. I'm absolutely not.
Mav, if you say that you're in the lead, meaning last place, then...
By a lot.
Sure.
By a lot. Yeah. Not even close.
Are a lot of your picks, though, like later season?
Yes.
Oh, and there you go.
I've had some picks come out, but I've only had very small movies come out. I've had two very small movies, I think.
Mav's biggest movie so far is Lisa Frankenstein, which made him almost $5 million.
Yes.
Meanwhile, me, with one movie, have $41 million in fourth place. Katya in third place with $118 million. That's because Godzilla and Kong is out.
It's a solid bet.
Mm-hmm. In second place is Wayne with a lot of movies, including Night Swim and Ghostbusters. And then Monica is indeed in the lead with Dune Part 2 and also that great film, Madam Web.
I really love that those are the only two movies that I have chosen. And somehow I'm in the lead. Thanks, Worm and Dune. Timothy Chalamet.
Yeah. I mean, I still think I can do it. But like right now, I'm chilling.
Yeah, I think most of mine are just done already, so.
Oh, no, you've got stuff. But yeah, I'm $239 million behind right now.
Got to fall upon that mercy agreement Mav and Monica made for Moana 2. Got to pray that makes some money. I'm not going to win. I never win. It's fine.
You say that. There is an easy chance that, like, you could make a bajillion dollars with Wicked. Or, you know, nothing, right? Like, nothing, it could be nothing.
I've said that every year and have won twice? Once?
Twice, I think. I don't
know. You say you're not going to win. You do. I'm saying I never win and I'm cursed. And I think last year really proved it. Like,
you just gotta wouldn't be manifesting it. What is it? What's that? I don't understand how the manifesting thing on the internet, that's like a whole different
thing. I just love it. If last year had
ended, manifesting.
I believe we figured out that if last year had ended on December 30th, Hannah would have won. And if last year had ended on January 1st, Hannah would have won. It was only for December 31st that you were behind.
And I'm telling you, that proves the curse.
By like a couple $1,000.
Like what else is there? A curse to explain that? Like, you know, the curse of irony of some sort. And also... You know, Katya picked Winnie Pooh Blood and Honey as her first pick.
Part two.
Oh, or second pick. I don't remember.
Oh, last year was part one. Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
No, Katya did funny.
Katya did. I mean, it was. Katya did not pick Winnie the Pooh Blood and Honey 2. She picked Mickey's Mousetrap. So we'll see.
Mickey's Mousetrap hasn't come out yet. And I think has it been pushed officially?
I appreciate that you guys keep track of my movie picks. Because I don't.
So I don't know. I am looking forward to the box office game still. I'm still happy about it. I'm not sure of my chances either. I mean, honestly, like, my big hopes and dreams are really on Deadpool here. I've got some other stuff that's got shots, right? But the Bad Boys movie, they'll make some change there. I'll get some good, you know, I expect I'll probably get some good, you know, Rotten Tomato scores on Challengers, which is upcoming. But I've got stuff like Planet of the Apes and Garfield movie and Furiosa. All of those could make money, or they could all tank. You know, the one that I feel most confident on is Deadpool 3.
Yeah,
that seems reasonable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Monica could win just solely based on how Joker 2, Dune 2, and Gladiator 2 do.
Yeah, yeah.
It would have twos.
Yeah, those were good picks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also,
Joker 2 does seem like an absolute travesty. It does seem like the cats of superhero movies, even though Madame Web currently holds that title, I'll still probably go watch it anyway. I just like the idea of, like,
have you not seen Madame Web yet? No, you saw Madame Web. We did a show on it, right?
No, and I loved it. But then, which is why I'm like, I don't know if it is the cats of superhero movies because I loved it. I think Joker might be the cats of superhero movies. Because why is it a musical?
Because Gaga.
It's a musical?
Not with original songs. It's like Moulin Rouge.
I'm really curious about this. I'm not going to lie. Joker 2.
I'm also curious. That's an interesting movie to do that with.
With Lady Gaga as Harley Quinn. And my presumption is, hey, she can sing. Let's make this a musical. I think that's probably what happened.
Like, maybe I'm stereotyping here, but like, I don't imagine the target demographic of a Joker movie is like generally super big into musicals. I could be very wrong.
Well, the target demographic was also not generally super into 70s film noir, but like that's what Joker 1 was. So, you know.
Sure. I feel like that's more palatable to the average person than, I don't know. I think it depends on how they handle it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm real curious. And I want to see that movie and see what happens.
For the listener, in case it's not clear, this is the episode where we're just going to talk about stuff.
We're catching up.
We're 10 minutes in and we haven't introduced the topic yet.
Well, there's a reason for that.
We have, just not explicitly, you know.
Well, so a few weeks ago, as you guys listened to it, but like a week ago mm-hmm. for us in real time, I did the PCA live show, but I was the only person who came to PCA the year. So it was me and a bunch of our regulars. We had Nicole, we had John and Joe Dorowski, we had Matt Brake. And, you know, I've said often that like a big part of this show is, hey, let's do the conference after party every week, even if there's no conference. But also, it's a lot of this is like, you know, our chance to hang out with our friends once a week and talk about weird smart people stuff, I guess. Pseudo smart people, pseudo academic stuff.
I was going to say, sometimes smart people talking about dumb things.
Right. But we haven't, like the five of us, the five hosts, we've not had the chance to do this with us in quite a while. So like sometimes it's mm-hmm. nice to just catch up on, you know, we got a bunch of news stories. We got a bunch of like pop culture happenings. We got just our lives. And like, you know, it's nice to just sort of catch up on that stuff every once in a while. So I love shows like this.
And if you the listener like it
to be nosy and like, you know, live vicariously through a bunch of nerds.
Hey, some of us have developed new interests recently, although I wouldn't call them not nerds.
Did you develop an interest or did you just buy a dog?
I did not.
I guess rescue a dog, technically.
Oh, no, I did not rescue. I did not rescue. Adopted. She is our family. Rescue, I think it is like specifically for like.
Fair. Okay. From rescue shelters. Yes.
But yes, I did get a dog from a breeder. Which, by the way, PSA. There's nothing wrong with getting a dog from an ethical breeder, but you need to be sure it's coming from an ethical breeder. And that requires a lot of research. Actually, like the like dog subreddit on Reddit has really good posts about like how to figure out how to get like find an ethical breeder and like what kinds of questions to ask. And now there are a lot of backyard breeders that like see like have gotten smart and like figured out how to sound like an ethical breeder. So it's actually like a very stressful and sometimes like difficult thing to like figure out what is a good fit for you. So like be prepared and like spend time on it and like be prepared to like be on a wait list. It's like a whole thing.
This is why I like shelters, is because I can just, you know, you just get whatever strange, weird kind of neurotic cat.
Yeah, so like cats I absolutely get from the shelter, but the reason why
I've never gotten an animal from a shelter. Mine have always been literally strays or like what is a literal picked up from an alley because
I've done that too.
The system at work.
All my cats have either come from the side of the road or like someone who had an accident or a rescue.
It is my absolute dream to be gifted by the cat distribution system. There's a part of me that, like, I don't want to go to a shelter. Like, I want a mangy street cat to chew me. That is...
Mine is not waiting quite as, like, mangy street cat, let that happen. But it was basically, like my first cat when I was, like, a kid. Oh, gosh. I think it was, like, a neighbor. I live on a suburb that used to be, like, basically adjacent to farmland. Now it's more developed. But one of our family friends found a litter of cats on their farm, and We adopted one, and then one of my mom's coworkers found a litter of cats in the alley behind her apartment complex.
Yeah, so that's I think what I want. I want it to be like
went to them, and then they redirected to me.
That's acceptable, but I really want one that is like missing all of its hair and is like a little bit twitchy, yeah. And I want to bring it inside. Like that's what I want.
Move to Chicago.
Yeah,
like there's actually a stray cat problem in Chicago. My aunt basically has a whole like thing she does. She's probably got at any given time 4 or 5 cats that she's basically adopted that are just like outdoor cats.
I
know the strategy if you want to know it. I guess
in LA, it is so bad. That shelters pay to put cats on airplanes and send them to other cities. Like, that's why I'm like, the LA cat distribution system will bless me if I just wait long enough.
Eventually, yeah.
Just put some sardines on your back porch.
That's true.
I'm not entirely kidding, actually. My parents, their dog comes from California, actually.
I have friends who have 4 cats that they rescued from literally a hole under an ancient tombstone in the Allegheny Cemetery.
Oh,
that's where and they were kittens. They were walking by her mewling and had all intentions of like saving them and making sure they were healthy and then farming them out. Mm. And all four cats live at that house now.
Spooky haunted cats. I love that.
Honestly, yeah. As soon as like, if a stray cat ever actually like came into my life, I'm just like the likelihood that it ever actually gets sent to a shelter is just like, no, this is mine now. This is why I can't foster. I would just collect cats.
Yep. I've been like, Josh, don't you want to foster? And he's like, no, I don't trust you, and that's fair.
Know thyself.
I mean, that's true. Like, when have I ever brought home an animal that like left our house? Besides now, the dog that goes on walks and comes right back home with me. And just by the way, the reason we got a puppy not from the shelter is just we wanted a thing that was predictable because we already had 2 older cats like living in the house. So we wanted to make sure it was good with cats, and she is. She does like the cats. Like, and the cats weirdly. Siegfried cares a little bit, but he just mostly ignores her. The cats just don't care that she's there.
So,
it's kind of a happy ending. And sometimes Polly and Mina's the puppy and Polly's my cat, they'll both sit on my lap at the same time while I'm working at my laptop.
For the listener, I have seen pictures of this. I can confirm very adorable.
Yeah.
My friends. And I think I told the listeners this, but Mina Barker is named after Mina Harker because. Why get a dog if you can't do a Victorian novel name? And if I had gotten a boy, his full name would have just been like Felix Holt, comma, the Radical after the George Eliot novel.
So like his name would have been, comma, the Radical as well?
Huh? Whole thing. I mean, we would just call him Felix, but like the whole collar, it just amused me and Josh. You know, there's someone for everyone. Know, what can you say?
Better to do to an animal than child.
Yes. that's the weirdest logic, but okay. I think you're right.
Hey, I mean, if that was your child's legal name, included comma the rebel, would that really be a great idea?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, you're not wrong.
I would enjoy it. I think up until the point I was around, like in my early 20s, I feel like it would be fun until I'm have to like do adult things. Like,
I don't know, man. Like,
get a line of credit.
Second and third grade can be rough, man. I don't know.
Yeah. Look, one of our childhood cats, my sister and my childhood cats' names was Snuggles, Snowball, Angel, Mr. Rogers. By that comparison, aww. Mina Barker is very simple.
No, Mina Barker's great. I think Mina Barker is adorable.
So there we are. We're doing dog stuff now. She goes to nose work classes on Wednesdays.
Are you going to teach her to like find your keys?
Maybe. She's a miniature schnauzer, so she's really smart.
My parents have a Malinois, and they're like doing the same kind of classes, and apparently you can teach them to like find keys while it's all kinds of shit in your house.
What is a nose work class?
You like teach them, I mean, actually Hannah probably knows more about this, but essentially you're teaching them to like scout things out by scent.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Yeah, makes sense.
We have hopes that one day she'll be an agility dog.
What does that mean?
Those little obstacle courses for like dogs that like they run around.
Are you guys be like the people who go to like the shows to like do the obstacle courses like compete? Or just for funsies?
We were thinking for funsies. I think she could compete in sporting events, but I haven't looked into it very seriously. And she's not a conform. She could not compete in conformation, like as the breed standard, because she doesn't follow. I mean, she is registered with the AKC, but her ears aren't cropped, which is thing that show dogs get. She has the cute little floppy ears, so technically she's not up to breed standard.
What's wrong with cute little floppy ears? Why can't she run obstacles with cute floppy ears?
She can, but she can't compete for this is a breed standard dog. Like Best in Show, when they have all the dogs, that comedy movie, when they have all the dogs competing in the dog show, not the sporting events. You can't do that.
Interesting. See, whenever I see the cat competitions versus the dog competitions, it reinforces to me how different dog and cat people are. Because the cat, every cat breed competition I've ever seen, they're just this is a great cat. What breed is it? No idea, but it's great.
Also, asterisk to all listeners, this is my best understanding of dog culture as a puppy owner of a month and a week. Get something wrong, please write in.
There's more about dog culture. They could come on the show and tell us important things about it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm actually really fascinated now by dog show culture, because I didn't realize everything about it until I started researching ethical breeders, because ethical breeders usually have dogs.
I grew up with tons and tons of dogs. My dad raced dogs, not the greyhound around the track kind of thing. They were called field trials. They were coonhound, greyhound mixes. When I was young, they were mostly coonhound. Over years, they got greyhound bred into them for speed. So I did that. Yeah. And it's this whole other world that I was part of that's hard to describe to anybody who wasn't in it. We would go different places every weekend. And these are tracks through the woods. We had this thing dragged along the ground that I'm told smelled like a raccoon. And it left a scent, and we would turn the dogs loose, and they would run through the woods, and they would come into a tree, and the first two to get there would win line, the first two to bark would win tree, and this is my life growing up, and the thing that allowed me, it grew out of, if anybody's ever seen, what's the movie, Where the Wildflowers Grow, mm-hmm. or The Wild, mm-hmm. that's not it, is that it?
I think so.
Where the Wild something grows. Where the Red Fern Grows.
Red Fern, yep.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. If you've ever seen that movie or read that book, the field trials I went to grew out of what that culture was, night hunts and that sort of thing back in the 20s and 30s, and became a more organized sport kind of thing. This is the thing that a lot of my dad and my bond in my teen years. But as a result of it, these dogs were, we made money off of this. If they weren't winning, we sold them. We're traded them. So kind of rule number one in my house is don't get attached to the dogs. They're not pets, mm-hmm. which, you know, as a teen, that was hard. Yeah. There were certainly the ones I got very attached to, but still, yeah, as they got older and stopped winning, they were traded off. But yeah, this is just a huge part of my childhood and teen years that I think very few people know about, because it's hard to talk about because there's no context for it with anybody I know.
You know, when you're racing dogs in the woods.
Yeah. And it was, and you know, unlike what you're talking about, Han, this was, you know, people, they would breed dogs for this, but they were doing it in their backyard in kennels. You know, this was not it was DIY dog breeding. And I saw stuff, you know, there was behaviors I saw in the early days of this. They would run dogs without muzzles. So I saw dogs fighting. I saw people get bit really horribly. Over time, muzzle rules were established to prohibit some of that. Most of the people I know that were really incredibly good to their dogs, we won a lot because we were good to our dog. I also witnessed people really abusing their dogs. And that's a part of the history that I'm not proud of or happy about. We didn't participate, but we certainly saw it. It was just,
that was with horse racing a lot too.
Yeah. It's a weird, it's still going on.
Yeah. I'm not hugely part of that world, but I have a lot of family that are. My family's very good to their horses. Honestly, the horses are better than people sometimes.
I made a Facebook group with this.
I've seen a lot of similar things.
It still continues. And you know, I joined the Facebook group because there are people who are scanning old pictures. So I've seen pictures of my mom and dad that other people took in 1978 that I've never seen before. So it's cool to see some of that stuff. But you know, also every Sunday night, Monday morning, I get the dog race results from the weekend. Which I barely know anybody who's going anymore. Like most of the names that I see are not familiar to me at all. But I've seen some wonderful pictures, not just my parents, but people who were so much a part of that. And just it's nice to have that record.
It's cool.
And to be clear, what I mean by backyard breeding is a term, not saying anyone who breeds out of their home. Yeah. Like ethical breeders do have their dogs live at home. What that term mm-hmm. means is like someone who like maybe doesn't know the breed, like isn't even breeding like purebred dogs, like they don't take care of them, like how they should with healthcare. It's
part that Wayne was complaining about, the bad part.
Yeah, like they like maybe have like a lot of puppies. Like I'm no expert on like what the different like what when it becomes like a puppy mill. But like they ethical breeders have very few litters and usually have a wait list. Backyard breeders always seem to have puppies and also like might have like random colors that are not to breed standard. Like miniature schnauzers, there are like 3 recognized colors in America. And like so if someone's like selling like a special eye color toy mini schnauzer, that's a backyard breeder flag because like they're breeding them not for like the standards that make the breed good. They're breeding them for appearances and introducing things into like the line that might not be for health, might be for just aesthetics. And like, you shouldn't breed a dog just for aesthetics.
I mean, technically all dogs were historically bred for aesthetics, right? Like the reason that we even have dachshund is like somebody saw a longer skinny wolf and a longer skinny wolf. And they were like, hey, let's put those two together. And then they saw a longer skinny wolf with some short legs. And they were like, what if? And then they put those together until we ended up with hot dogs, right? Like, so there is a sense in which like, it's kind of, the idea of breeding dogs, like kind of is all backyard breeding at some point in time. If you just go back far honestly why a lot of dogs like have health issues to this day, which is again why it's really important to use an ethical breeder because they're not thinking about the health issues that a dog might have. But the idea of like dogs that have really short snouts, it's because essentially they were backyard bred for a really long time until we ended up with bulldogs, right? Like, so I don't know. That's always been a strange one to me to think about. Just, like, it was just stupider and stupider wolves until we popped out corgis. Like,
but like, isn't that all science? And like, I mean, so like, basically, the reason academia exists is hey, we used to do really crazy shit to figure out how the brain worked, and then we thought, hey, but what if ethics? And then that's how we got psychology, right? Like, it's like, rather than just like doing experiments on people, what if we thought about the ramifications of things tried to do it healthy?
So true story, when I was 8 years old, I was on the cover of the National Field Trial magazine with our top winning dog that year. So I was a cover boy at age 8.
You don't plan to be on a magazine with my dog, just to be clear. I just wanted to have fun.
But maybe a little obstacle course.
You're like planning an obstacle course running. Like, I mean, that is the possibility of the future is when, you know.
There's got to be magazines that are about
I'm sure there are, but I don't just want her to have fun. I don't want to like, I'm not going to be that like dog show mom who's like,
oh yes you are.
Oh, I'm not.
Like stage mother for your dog.
I'm not going to be Parker Posey for show and like squeeze the busy bee at Mina. I'm not going to do
it. How many times have you watched that movie in the last month?
Once.
One? Okay.
Only one. Yeah. I got it from the library on DVD because I don't subscribe to Max anymore.
Had you never seen it before?
No. I saw it a couple years ago. I've seen it 3 times in like the last 5 years. I saw it a couple years ago at a local brewery whose name I will redact in case Warner Brothers gets mad because they like were doing movie nights. So a group of friends like where it happened to be at this brewery when they were showing this movie. And I was like, I've never seen this before. This is quite funny, actually. But like, didn't see all of it. And then my sister has a Westie Terrier. And I thought about this movie a couple years ago. And I was like, Mary, you should watch this movie because you're obsessed with terriers. And so we watched all the way through and they found it very funny. And then like, got the dog. And I was like, you know, I bet this might like ring a little more true to us now that we have a dog. I was delighted to remember that they do have a miniature schnauzer like sequence at the dog show, where it's not a featured dog with one of the main characters, but they do show the little miniature schnauzer dancing around the arena. I was very excited about it. So three times in the last 5 years, Mav, that's not so bad.
Yeah, that's reasonable. That doesn't mean you're not going to become that person. But
because I am not Parker Posey. Well, I'm both not Parker Posey and not her character. And also, I don't dog shows. Yeah. Can't.
Oh, okay.
So maybe this is
AKC shows. Yes. On this episode, no kidding. How do we get to, we've done like 15, 20 minutes on dog training, but so go for it.
I want to talk about, when I thought about what am I going to bring up for this episode, I want to talk about a thing that has sparked joy and also made me feel like I'm aging. And I think somehow the dog shows led me to this point, but I just finished watching all of Girls 5 Ever, which I didn't. I don't usually watch comedies ever. Has anyone else watched this yet?
I've never watched it. I know what it is.
I have not heard of it.
Okay. Girls 5 Ever. It was on Peacock, and it just recently made the switch to Netflix. And it is a show starring Sarah Bareilles and Busy Phillips as what is essentially a aging millennial girl group trying to stage a comeback.
I'm gonna get Hannah on your side because you said Sarah Bareilles and Busy Phillips, who are in it, but also Renee Elise Goldsberry.
Yes. And so they play a girl group that was essentially at its height in the 90s and were kind of one hit wonders or one album wonders and then disappeared into obscurity. And they're trying to stage their comeback in the contemporary space. And I don't like sitcoms. Like, this is a thing that we have talked about. Never seen an episode of The Office. I have seen 30 Rock, maybe laughed at like one joke via an episode. I have never laughed like I was going to pee my pants or start crying from a TV show before than I have with Girls 5 Ever. And I do think that it is because it is speaking to the aging millennial inside of me. And that does make me a little sad. But I think it's supposed to. That is the brand of humor that they are also going for, is that aging does make you feel a little sad, but it's okay. And I think, like, as the youngest one here, like, now I get to have that revelation as someone who is in their 30s, right? But, like,
how old are you again?
31.
Okay.
So there is something where a show about aging has never spoken to me. I don't know what's happening. I started seeing a therapist. We're going to talk about it this week. You betcha. But this was one where I was like, I think that Wayne would really enjoy it because so many of the jokes are about the way that the music industry has changed over time. I think that Hannah and Katya would really love it from this. We are specifically attacking what it means for like the update of millennial femininity and how it's so different than like Gen Z femininity. And that feels like something that is a niche audience that's really working for me. I'm sad that nobody else has seen it yet, though.
I didn't know till just now Renee Elise Goldsberry was older than I am. Like, I assumed, like, she's way older than she looks because she's one of the stars of this. And she is not a millennial. She is 53 years old.
Of aging. That is a thing that I have noticed for. It's like, I'm in my mid-30s. And it's just like now this, I've hit the age where it's like I look on media and most people are like, I feel like, or like not most people, but a lot of people that get talked about in like media are my age or younger. And it's a weird experience that I've become aware of. I don't know if that's a rite of passage.
Also, I don't know how old anyone is anymore because I can't figure out, are you 20? Are you 40? Are you 50? I don't know.
This is a thing that I have been curious about because there's so much I've seen on, because I'm a big fan of but I'm a big fan of the skincare. And the algorithm knows this, which means
I too have skin.
It's like as a self-care hobby.
You might have
a 4-step, 5-step skincare routine. I'm not going to judge, but you know, retinol and all that.
Not five. But continue, because I might be interested. Yes.
It's self-indulgence. But because of that, the algorithm seems to think that I'm very concerned about aging. And there has been this thing on, I mean, I'm not watching it on TikTok, but it's basically TikTok, I think, mostly getting reposted to Instagram and then people having conversations about it, of people claiming that Gen Z is aging, like, visually exponentially faster than millennials. And I was wondering, like, how much of this is, like, actually new, though? Because I feel like we talk about in the show a lot is, like, some things, like, culture obviously changes over time. But, like, this feels like something that, like, this feels familiar to me, but I'm not old enough to actually, like, speak to it in the sense of, like, there's always intergenerational conflict. And I think some of the things that people are pointing out of, like, Gen Z being, like, you know, more anxious, younger, blah, 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 might be realistic. I don't know. But I don't know. I guess I was just curious of, like...
When you say aging faster, what in what sense? Are you saying visually, so, like, or are you asking maturity or what?
Visually.
See, so,
like,
I
the idea that people are saying that, like, Gen Z looks... like they're like basically somebody who's like like early 20s and Gen Z looks 30. And I'm like, I don't think that's, I think it's also like that might be true of people who are like very chronically online. But I was like, I see most like people who at least look Gen Z to me around Portland. And I'm like, they look very normal.
Okay, I can speak to this one a little bit because this is, we're getting into my wheelhouse of youth culture. All right. No, I don't think they are. I have heard people say this too, and I think they're wrong. I think what you're getting is, okay, there's this weird thing where everyone views their own generation as, and okay, generations outside of doing, so if you're doing actual cultural studies, we tend to not use generations as strongly as people who are doing demographic studies. But I'm going to in this situation because it is an easy shorthand and we're not doing a whole academic paper. We're just using, we're just talking on our podcast. But so I'll use me, for instance, because that's, as a Gen Xer, Gen Xers tend to think baby boomers look old regardless of their logic. So you'll see people who are my age saying, how is it that the women on, crap, Monica was talking about Sex and the City before, but what's the Sex and the City reboot called? And Just Like That.
And Just Like That. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. The women on And Just Like That are the same age as the women on The Golden Girls. I mean, at least when they were not, when they're coming out. But the women on The Golden Girls look like old ladies, whereas the women on And Just Like That kind of, you know, they're still attractive women. And it's not, it's because they're stylistically, the people on Golden Girls always looked old, even though they were basically 50 when those, when that was coming out. They just, it was just an older look. Old people from the, now, similarly, what ends up happening is I, like, my entire life, or my entire adult life, since I was like maybe 30-ish, people have been like, huh, you know, 20 somethings and teenagers, they didn't look like that when I was that age. Like when I'm 25, I'm like, people are saying 15-year-old girls didn't look like that when I was 15. And
right. I was going to say, like, this feels like something that's like, it doesn't, I guess it's like TikTok is saying like, this has never happened before. And as soon as somebody comes and say like, this has never happened before. I'm like,
yeah, it has. It's what it is. It's the markers, the visual markers of normalcy, like, are just different enough to where it appears to us as though they're aging. Like, so I don't think that, I think that you're getting to the age where, since you are no longer the young adult, you know, the literal YA, as in, like, you know, you're no longer a 15-year-old. And even at a, like, even at 25, you're like relating to 15-year-olds in a way that you don't at 35. You know what I mean? Like, like you've aged out. So at 35, I think 15-year-olds look like, oh my God, why are they wearing so much makeup? As opposed to at 25, you're like, huh, neat eyeshadow trick. I should try that. Like, I think that's the difference. Well,
I think it's also like, and I think this is also like the presentation of Gen Z online versus real world, I think is also radically different. Because like, I think also what they're looking at is they're looking at people who are like, want to be influencers that are like doing things like getting Botox really young.
Yes. Same thing. Yeah. Same thing. Yeah. It's for my age to be like,
I'm like, sure. But like,
for my age, the millennials were
demographic.
Yeah, the Zoomers were looking at, I'm sorry, Boomers rather. The Boomers were looking at people our age and going, oh, they look so slutty. I'm like, you're not looking at real people. You're looking at Britney Spears or Madonna or whoever who is performing, not like kids walking to the mall.
Right. Because it's like, also, it's like whether you're an actual, like, legitimate influencer or like whatever, it's like the desire to be that is like personal branding. You are presenting yourself as a brand. Whether that includes like clothing, Botox, all this other stuff. It's like, yeah, I could see how for some people that's going to be quote unquote aging. I don't know. I just find it really interesting. Is like, I find the whole like intergenerational, like millennial Gen Z feud.
You know what I realized?
On social media every couple of months to be like so stupid.
Here's when I realized I was objectively an old man TM. This is not this. It's like 2 winters ago. It's when I first started working at Pitt, and I was walking. Pitt's a pretty big campus. So I was walking from the building where my office is to a building where I was teaching. It's two Pittsburgh city blocks, which is, you know, it's not, Pittsburgh blocks are smaller than New York city blocks, but it's enough of a walk that, like, if you're going to do this, you know, you want to give yourself 10 minutes to walk between the two buildings. So that gives you about how far I was walking. And it was winter, so it was snowing. And I taught my class, and then I'm walking back to my office. Actually, I was walking from the building where my class is back to my office, and walking in the opposite direction, you know, towards those other academic buildings, I could see at a distance some random girl. I mean, I don't know how old she was. I'm going to say she was 19, but I could see her at a distance, and I could see that she was wandering through. It's January and it's snowing, and she's got on a winter coat, but it's open, it's unbuttoned, and she's wearing a short skirt, and she's wearing like a halter top, like a spandex sports bra halter top as like a top so that she can show off, you know, her midriff. And I'm like walking there, and my thought is not, oh my God, she's hot. My thought is, oh my God, what's wrong with that child? She's gonna freeze to death. And I was just like,
I think that's also like teacher vibes. Like, this is like why.
Part of it's a teacher vibe, right? I mean, yeah, I don't know. You're a teacher, like,
you relate to people of that demographic differently. Right.
I'm sure objectively she was attractive. And I did realize, I did realize once I got there that, oh my God, this girl has an 8-pack of abs. She had like a perfect stomach. I am so jealous. And perhaps that, you know, perhaps if I had, you know, washboard abs like that, maybe I would want to show them off every opportunity I got as well. Like, I understand why you have made this decision, but also it's 7 degrees outside. Please button your coat and show them off once you get inside. What's wrong with you, child?
You know, like in Chicago, the amount of people that would wear like shorts in the middle of a snowstorm, it's like, you know, my mom says it's like your brain doesn't have fully connected until 25. So
my head is just going, what's wrong with you? Like, but, and again, like, you're, and I didn't say anything, but like you said, because I mean, I don't know her. She's not even one of my students. It's just like, I'm a teacher. So part of it is really, like you said, it's a different dynamic in that I am a literal teacher and she is a literal student at this university. But also, I don't think it was just that. I think it's just, I've reached a point in my life where, I mean, so I certainly...
There's a cultural gap.
Yeah. Well, when I was in great shape at 19, sure. Because I used to have... I mean, I don't think I ever had an 8-pack, but I had really good abs because I worked at it a lot. And I, you know, wore a shirt as little as possible for that exact reason. Because, you know, hey, look what I've done. But also, that was often in the summer. You know,
not in January. Is that part of the look?
No, I did not want to show off my stomach or in January because it's cold outside and I'm a wimp. Yeah. So like,
I had an 8-pack at that time. It was in bubble wrap, but
same way.
I do like to think that is a hallmark of aging. Like, I am just thinking about, like, I was like, yeah, we learned this really special skill in college where we wore really tall shoes. And then you figured out how to stomp the stiletto heel like into the ice enough that it was like giving you grip. Like on the way to the party, and so absolutely there were no tights on those legs, right? Like that is a universalizing experience when it comes to like wearing as little clothes as possible because you feel like your body will never be hotter. You feel like the hotness of your body is the thing that is warming the outside.
You're talking
so
about
much
going to a party or a club.
Yeah,
we're still doing that,
it was cold. I was wearing jeans.
Right. This is 10 a.m. This is going to class.
Nobody explained leaselined anything to me at that age. Like, I'm still going to class in what is the thinnest pair of leggings you have ever put on your body, which I am
still
going
like
to argue... No, like as a child in college, the idea of no one will explain layers to you until you turn at least 25. Like that is just the rite of passage that you have to go through.
So
the reason for that is all us old people are looking at youth and like, fuck them, let them be cold.
Yeah, that part, at some point.
I'm not telling them about layers. I'm not telling about layers.
Maybe this is a chance for me to like also throw in a little bit of my like fashion design knowledge, but I do think the actual materials that we were using have changed over time. Where
absolutely.
Now layers are much more of a necessity because now 90% of sweaters don't have any wool in them versus able to just get away with a sweater because that sweater was actually made of an insulating material, right? Like, so there is something about the clothes are getting... like are legitimately getting cheaper. Like my little dress came from Forever 21 and cost $9 because it was made in an unethical factory. And I hadn't learned about those things yet. And no one explained to me that like the reason something costs $9 is also because it's been made out of recycled polyester, which means it's more and more inferior versions of polyester rather than like new polyester is actually better polyester than recycled polyester when we're going to talk about like the actual like physical performance of that material. It's shittier for the environment. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to the actual like when people are always complaining about feeling like the stores that they used to shop at now their clothes are here, it's like it's not in your head. Yeah, they actually are shittier.
It's a $9 dress with $8 of material and it had to get here on a truck, so think about it.
Well, the labor practices have always been an issue, but even like I mean, and Monica probably knows more like official information about this, but like I've basically like given up on buying new clothes, even like quote unquote nice ones, because like even stuff like Forever 21 and H&M, like I have an H&M blazer that I bought when I was 21 that I still have that looks fine. But
you can't do that with Forever 21 and H&M now. Yeah, exactly.
No, exactly. Like, and it's like it's like even at the same price point, the same stores or even more expensive, the quality is so much less.
And some
it's like,
of that
I don't understand how people are supposed to like be responsible.
Well, you're not supposed to be responsible is the point. The intention is not that you are.
The possibility of like being a conscientious consumer has just become more in clothing specifically.
A company would want you to not be a conscientious consumer.
And also furniture too. Like I say as someone who recently bought some new stuff for her house. Like, first of all, why would I buy crappy like ugly like big box store couch for like $1,500 if I just like suck it up and can spend a couple more to get like a custom thing that like actually lasts, A, but B, like even like nice brands like, you know, Crate and Barrel and stuff, they don't like make stuff that like is like full wood anymore. Or people say Ethan Allen like has gone down in quality, which like used to be like my grandmother had Ethan Allen stuff that's still in her house and is older than like my parents probably. Mm-hmm. And you can buy things in off Facebook Marketplace for like $200. They're solid wood and it's all good. But then like you go to a store and it's like, just give us $1,000 and we will give plywood coffee table. And it's like, what?
I can speak to some of that, which one, it is shitty and it is because capitalism, because when you insist that you pay workers more, capitalism is still going to try and keep the same profit margin. And one of the places to do that is materials. Then also when we actually talk about the production has and consumption habits have gone way up in a way that raw materials literally cannot keep up with. Some of your particle board shit isn't made of real wood because we haven't grown enough fucking trees to replace the amount of real world furniture that you now think. Because now we do kind of talk about like people's houses as being full of old furniture because you used to buy one fucking table and then keep it your entire lives. Like, your house looks outdated. It's supposed to, because that's how you are supposed to buy furniture in terms of your consumption habit. Like, this idea of thinking that we need to buy new things every time we move, because now we all move a lot more often, is also part of it, too. So, like, we can't keep up with these raw materials. They have to be coming from somewhere.
I read an article that talked exactly what you're talking about and also said that companies realized, if we just convinced everyone that they could have, you know, like fast fashion, but for furniture, and they need to do these refreshes to keep up with the trends instead of like focusing on pieces that last, you know, probably very poorly paraphrasing that, you know, like I, we, I will clarify that we only bought some new furniture because we'd had a couch for 10 years that was a crappy, like, $100-something one. And I was like, oh, finally, after 10 years, I can be an adult and buy a thing. But, like, I got my money's worth out of that crappy old couch. It went through a lot.
I mean, but also when we talk about this, like, even fast fashion is now faster than fast fashion used to be, yeah, right? Like, yeah. So something like H&M did not put out the same number of items as fast as it does now. So fast fashion meant something different. So there is a terrible chart that talks about Shein churn.
Oh, God. I've seen that chart.
300,000 new items, new SKU numbers added to the website every single day. Who the fuck is buying 300,000 new things every day? Oh, stop. Like, and yeah, obviously Shein exists because it is supposed to be this example of being the worst offender. Now Ethan Allen is kind of doing the same thing. Like, you used to be able to go into that store and my mom could, if she lost a dining chair in a move, right? Like, she could go back and get another one of those dining chairs 8 years later because they're still fucking making that same line. They're not doing that anymore, right? No. And so we are also, there's a planned obsolescence that exists too, where, like, if all of your things were supposed to match and you lose one of them, well, now you are now replacing an entire table of chairs set instead of just the one, right? There's entire markets of things like called replacements or eBay or mm-hmm. that exist just so that people don't have to go through the pain in the ass of buying the 12 new things and can keep their set of 11 dishes and they just want the one missing one, right? Like, it's just harder now.
Even like super basic stuff. Like, I have boring ass white plates that I bought, I think, when I was like 20 from like World Market or something. And they had the same line literally for like 15 years or whatever the heck it was. And then they just discontinued a whole, like, almost all of it. And I was like, but I can't replace one. Like, I broke one of my plates and I'm like, I can't replace my plates. And so I just have mismatched plates.
I've got first off, I have the same plates that I had in college that I use every day still today as well. So it's been, and it's been even longer, but I've got
ceramic shit and it'll last forever.
I've got the best version of that. So the house that we live in, we bought a house. We've had this house, I think we bought it in 2005. So we've had it for 19 years. It came with a stove from like the 70s, possibly the 60s. I'm not sure how old my stove is. It's ancient. It's a gas stove. It's fine. And, oh, I don't know, like, I've had the house for 20 years. So like a decade ago, at some point, we accidentally knocked one of the knobs off the stove and it broke. It, like, the plastic on it broke, so it wouldn't attach back to the stove. But, like, I was able to go, and I know how much I spent on it. For $9, I was able to go on Amazon and just buy a replacement knob, the exact same knob, because I was like, oh, perfect. I just looked around on Amazon for, you know, General Electric stove or whatever it was. I read the model number, entered it in Amazon, and for, like, $8 plus shipping, which was free because, you know, Amazon Prime, I got a new stove knob. So that was like a decade ago. Fast forward to this last month, one of the other knobs, the oven knob actually, was greasy. And, you know, because it's a stove. And Steph goes, well, I'm going to take the knobs off and wash it. And so she washed the knob, but, like, it was so old that the paint apparently was loose. And it just, we've washed them before, but this most recent time washing it, when we're done, it's like, oh, all the numbers and everything are now gone on my oven. Oh, here's the problem. Here's the problem. This is exactly the problem. So it's like, okay, no problem. I know how to replace this because Amazon's there for me. And so I go to Amazon because I know my model number. And I can just look it up. They don't sell them anymore.
No.
Because the stove, whoever owned my house before that we inherited the stove from, they didn't buy it new. So I'll be 50 years old this year. So my stove is like 60, you know, and it's just like, they've stopped making the knobs that fit on that stove. I can buy other knobs, but those aren't useful because the numbers aren't in the exact same place. And it's, you know, it's an oven. The temperature matters, right? Right. So, right. Yeah. So here's where I'm irritated by it, right? Like, I'm like, okay, clearly other knobs exist, right? So I go and I've just been looking on like eBay and just other, you know, discount parts stores and stuff where people, and the going rate for oven knobs for my model of stove is between $150 and $200 for the knob.
It's vintage now.
It's a vintage knob. And that's what people are selling. That's what people are selling the knob. People are like, oh, you can buy this knob for $100. I'm not paying. Like, I could buy a brand new stove.
Vintage knobs that aren't owning this stove. I think that's what I want to know.
Yeah.
Like, you can't market something as vintage.
I've been called
on its own.
I've been called a vintage knob as well. So.
No, but seriously, like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do here, right? Like I could get I can't get that exact stove, but if I want to buy a brand new stove, it's going to cost me, depending on the quality of stove I want, between like $300 and $1,000, right? And $1,000 is a lot of money, but also it's the whole stove.
Right.
$200 knob.
I know a lot of people who paint miniatures for a living. Maybe we can get them to.
I'm considering it because I mean, I could fix it in that, like, it's the knob is such that, like, there are indentations in the groove, like it was paint inside the, so I can figure it out. Like, we can still cook because we can
see put a meat thermometer in there.
Was.
Yeah.
Oh no, but I mean, even that, I can see where 300 degrees was. I can see where 400 degrees was. I'd like to fix it, but I don't want to fix it, you know, $150 worth. Like, it just doesn't make sense. And if I, you know, and again, maybe it is not the best stove. It's, you know, like, it is another thing where it's like, well, maybe we should replace the stove. It is 60 years old, right? So, like, it's gotten its usefulness through me and the previous owner, right? You know, I get why it is time, but also it's perfectly good. It cooks things completely fine. So I don't particularly want to replace it, but also I don't know what to do in a situation where, hey, this thing clearly has lasted forever, but also I don't want to, you know, don't want to spend money on, you know, more than the stove is worth to replace it. I wonder if I can find the entire stove like on eBay for like $200. and I'll just keep it in my basement for when stuff breaks.
Salvage parts. Honestly, if you can find one, it wouldn't be the worst idea.
Because that would be better than spending $150. Like, I would totally spend $200 on another stove identically like this, even if it didn't work, that I could just yank parts off of, before I would spend $150 just on an oven knob, which just seems insane to me.
Yeah. So we resolved nothing. Not that we were trying to resolve anything.
We weren't.
Yes.
We've resolved. If any of our listeners have stuck this out, they are dedicated.
You know, once someone listened to a whole show about a movie they hadn't seen yet and wrote us a review about it. So.
Yeah. Yep. Well, and if you've made it this far, thank you for being part of our little confab here.
So going to our stats have been up lately. Like, so. Along with every other podcast in the world, at the beginning of COVID, like, you would think that COVID would happen and podcast traffic would go up, but it didn't. It went down because people weren't commuting anymore. So that hurt people. But also, every celebrity that couldn't work decided to start their own podcast. So people like us who are not celebrities, you know, our ratings went down a little bit and they've been recovering lately. So thank you to everybody listening. And, you know, if you haven't told a friend to come listen to us, please go tell all your friends to come listen to us. You know, I think we're interesting. You must think we're interesting if you're still listening to this. And most of the time there's a real topic even.
Yeah, more
sorry,
often
my
than
thoughts
not,
the on best in show are not a real topic.
Most of the time there's a planned topic and not an organically what we got topic. But I enjoyed this just because, you know, like we said, we haven't had a show with all of us in a while, and I really do like hanging out with you guys, so it's been awesome to be able to do this again.
Agreed.
Yeah.
So anyway, go in reverse join order. Monica, where can people find you?
I think I'm trying to make Twitter happen again.
Twitter?
I don't know.
Really? Not no more please follow me on Letterboxd?
Nobody followed me on Letterboxd, Mav, and I just if I keep in for it, it's just gonna be sad. So
you can
find me at Monica Marvelous. And I guess you can find me on Twitter or on Instagram, and that is LOUS on Instagram and LOUX on Twitter. Also, if you're in the LA area, my exhibition with the FITA Museum is still up, but only through the end of the month. So make sure that you get there before the end of April. It's free to the public, and you can see some really wonderful costumes that were nominated for the Oscars this year.
Hey, and Hannah.
You know, I actually did join a social media thing about book reading, but I don't remember the app name and I don't remember my username, so I can't plug it.
So wait, there's a book.
But tune into a future episode in which you will plug it, and then you can follow it.
It's like Goodreads, but it's not. Mary is my only friend. I'm okay with that.
You have a social media. You have a social media account where literally the only person you're connected to is your actual sister, the one person you don't need social media to keep in touch with.
Maybe not, but like I didn't join this for the friends. I joined this to keep track of my page count, and I'm feeling pretty good about that.
All right, Katya, what about you?
I'm technically on Instagram at just that nerd kid and other places. Do I post? No. You can mainly find me here sometimes. A year.
It's been more than once a year.
I've said this on the show many times, but like researching media and like a variety of adjacent things was a non-trivial part of my doctoral research. And I think after that, I'm just like, do I want to spend a substantial amount of my time posting stuff on there? I don't know. Not to say that like people who do is like that's necessarily a bad thing, but I'm just like, so I'll let all the followers follow you, Mav.
I'm better at social medias.
Mom follows you. Yeah. I get updates about your social media from my mother.
Oh, that's awesome. Tell her I said hi.
Everyone, because I'm not on Twitter very much anymore. My mom occasionally like, Mav posted an interesting thing on Twitter. I want to talk to you about it. And I'm like, okay, cool.
Awesome. Wayne, what about you?
Oh, you know better than to ask me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here, you can find me here.
Mav, which one of us has disappointed you the most today?
What do you mean?
Is this a new score game? The box office where like who has disappointed Mav?
Yeah, like
on a scale of 1 to 10.
And, yeah, because like at any time Wayne or Katya are like, there's nothing for us to plug in our various ways of saying that, you're always like, So which one of us made you sigh the loudest internally?
I'm used to it at this point. I will say, like 2 weeks ago, this was 6 years of this show. I think 2 weeks ago, as we was, which, you know, we had the PCA show, and I just realized that, you know, this show started, I think I said on that episode, that was the worst conferencing week of my life, / the best. It was the time where I did 3 different conferences in an 8-day period, and I said never again. But we recorded the first episode literally in the middle of that. I came home for one day, and that was me and Wayne and our guest, John Dorowski. So we've been doing this for like 6 years, and I love it. I still like it. So, you know, social media plugs are non-existently aside, I just love doing this every week. So thank you guys.
Yeah.
Thank you, going for a joke, and you were being so genuine. Like, my heart is warmed.
Social media.
The entire concept of the show was, hey, you know, what if I could talk to my academic friends once a week? You know, like hanging out at the bar. And we didn't know there would be a pandemic. So, you know, so right. to suddenly just have like, no, happy hour still exists. It's just online. I love this. So thank you guys. So
I think especially since we're all dispersed across many geographic locations at this point.
Yeah, that too. So
one day.
That makes keeping in touch hard.
One day we'll be together again.
Yeah.
Or when was the last time? Not all 5 of us have ever been together in the same room.
Mm-hmm. I don't think we ever have. Yeah.
But the exception of Maka, the last time I think the 4 of like us were together
was PCA
in DC. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. The year before.
Yeah, I was gonna say there's a picture somewhere on my professional website.
Right. The year before PCA. The year before the pandemic. So hopefully. hey, you know, everybody can like go, like New Orleans is PCA next year, so you know.
Oh, that is the one place I might go, but
well, because it's close enough to like.
I was gonna say I might. I'd consider it.
I'm thinking the same thing. It's
Yeah, we could
you can use it as an excuse to go home, right? Is it like
we could like rent a house all together.
We could call that the title of the show, the Vox Pop House. We could play all those board games I bought that we were supposed to play together and we didn't.
I'd do it. I can't promise I'd actually get it paper together, but you know.
We could just do a round table together, right?
Yeah. I mean, I'm an area chair now, so sure, I can. those are easy.
Okay, so. I have this idea about these fairy books that everyone's into and Darwin's theories of sexual selection.
Oh, perfect, because I was going to say, so I'm the area chair of the erotica group, so it has to have something to do with sex, but like, once that's true, I can just okay anything I want.
Yeah.
there you go. easy enough.
I can cite one of my dissertation advisors because... like, all I did my first year of grad school, this is not true, was read Descent of Man and, like, get, like, her specific take on it so I can, like, read her book more thoroughly.
That's not true, but it's also not true.
Descent of Man's really long. Like, I started reading
it. I remember you spent, that was a significant chunk of your time.
Like,
I love how this is a significant point of person to show to do like in Hannah's non-existent outro.
Anyway,
sorry everyone.
That's fine. It's great. It's better than you know. I'm not on social media.
Yeah.
But kinky fairies,
sex
though.
Fairies. Yeah, yeah. Come to PCA next year.
We'll talk off air, but I do have other additional things to talk about. Along with like the concepts of sex fairies, like there's literally a book behind me where I'm like, you know, I actually have content.
An episode just called Sex Fairies, please,
guys. Please. I need you guys to read A Court of Thorns and Roses and the rest of them so we can talk about it because like everyone's into these books.
How long is this series?
It's like there's three books and then like some sequels, and like it reads as fast as Twilight does and reads similar to Twilight. I know I'm really selling this. Like they're not good. Like,
how many explosions? How many explosions?
There are a lot of explosions, actually. Okay. There's like a war. There's like a.
I could be convinced.
Did anyone read The Chronicles of Prydain?
Like, no. Nope.
See the Black Cauldron, the Disney movie that's real messed up. Am I the only one who read these books as a child?
Yep.
Yeah, okay. All right.
So anyway, you can follow me on Twitter or Instagram or Facebook or Blue Sky Threads when I remember to post there. I'm probably still on Mastodon.
Wait, Threads is still a thing?
Threads is still a thing. I remember
that's a thing.
Yeah, Threads is a thing that's growing. I have like friends who are like flocking to Threads. It's weird. Like that is one of the social media places where I feel like there's like a whole niche of people who I see going there, like people I know personally, mm-hmm. and also like, you know, like professional, like, so James Gunn, who is obviously famous, just mm-hmm. did like a big AMA thing on Threads like last week. Gail Simone posts there regularly. Like it's weird. So, and then like, it's my sister-in-law, that's her social media place of choice. So if I need to know what's going on in her mind, it's where she posts things most often. I don't know.
And Threads, I feel like, is becoming like the Facebook of millennials and Gen X.
Right. It's weird. But then like, I know other people who are sort of like, there's a substantial number of people who are sort of returning to Facebook because, I mean, what am I going to do? Use Twitter? Like, that's like there's like a big subset of people who like Facebook was dying. They weren't dying. They were always the biggest social media site on the planet.
They were losing more people.
They were losing market share. And that's no longer true because like, it's literally people going, I will not be associated with Elon. And so I guess I'll go to Facebook. And then, you know, and then like Mastodon wants those people, but they're not getting them. And then there's Blue Sky is still out there. There's a lot of social media and I'm on most of them at Chris Maverick. So you can follow me there.
It'll pull that book back.
Yeah, I tried. You can follow the show right now just on Facebook and Twitter and Blue Sky. at Vox Popcast. You can follow the show's blog at www.voxpopcast.com, where we post about when we remember, because we've been like really bad about this. We post about whatever we're going to be talking about next week. And you can leave us comments on this or any other show. You can suggest topics. You can ask to be a guest. You can just let us know what you're thinking. If you enjoy the show, and we certainly hope you do, then please subscribe to us on iTunes or Spotify or Pandora or wherever the hell you get podcasts from. And do us a favor, leave us a 5-star review. If you leave us a 5-star review, especially on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, that gooses the algorithm, makes us more popular, and really helps us out. I would like to thank Maximilian of Vault 4 Music for our epic theme song building ever so more epically and playing us out. I'd like to thank all of my co-hosts for joining me. I'd like to thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time. Goodbye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.
Hi, this is Mav again. The show's over, but in closing, I just want to remind everybody once again, we've posted the suicide hotline in the show notes. So if you are having a hard time, please reach out and try to get help. Thank you for listening.